Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, Madhya Leela 1, text 128. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Jaita Chanda Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Jaita Chanda Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Raja Agyalaya Tenu Aila Kati Dina Kati Dina Krishna Katta Ramananda Sane. Upon the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Ramananda Roy took leave of the king. Took leave of the king and returned to Puri. After he arrived, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much enjoyed talking with him both day and night about Lord Krishna and his pastimes. Kasi Misre Kripa Pradyumna Misrari Milan Paramanda Puri Govinda Kashivara Dhamana. After Ramananda Roy's arrival, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed his mercy upon Kasi Misra and met Pradyumna Misra and other devotees. At that time, three personalities, Paramananda Puri, Govinda, and Kashivar, came to see Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath Puri. Omajnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sa Padantikam Adadanastanam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padamboja Yulisham Janma Janmani Paragya Yudvakti Rusham Payatnai Apayama Manabhipshamandham Kripam Budhiya Paraduka Duki Sanatanastam Prabhamasvayami Vansha Kalpa Turubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadha Shivasade Ghor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Greetings from Newburgh, New York, Cornwall, New York. I'm at the home of the Lovell family, one of my regular stops where we had the Panihati Festival. And the family is hosting me nicely. The respected father is sitting here with his oldest son here and his children. I'll give the class here. When I was younger, I used to like a book by John Steinbeck called Of Mice and Men. And I just remember one of the statements, the best laid plans of mice and men often go astray. So I'm going to give one of my excuses. My day did not go as I planned. And, you know, these classes take some preparation. But I guess there are things that we can discuss. Generally, I say that and then I run out of time. But today, I really don't know really so much what I'm going to speak about. And different sections take different amounts of effort to prepare. But of course, we're in this wonderful section where the Seisha Lila. Seisha Lila includes Madhya and Antya. In the Adi Lila, up to 24 years, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes sannyas. And we have that the six-year period where he travels in South India to go to the holy places, to purify the holy places. And I always mention, and this is such a fact, that we don't have access so much to spiritual phenomena in a very, very deep way. But the great souls do, and therefore the great souls have access to the Dham. And because they are there accessing the spiritual phenomena of the holy places, we go to get their association, and by their association, perhaps get access to the holy place. But if those great souls were not attracted to the holy places would not have that much relevance to us. But I have to say, the potency of places like Vrindavan Dham, Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion how, you know, even non-devotees will feel that. And I remember somehow or other, it's so amazing that my parents somehow or other were able to go and spend time in Vrindavan Dham, and without any, some bun began, discriminatory understanding of Krishna consciousness. I always tell the story when I took my mother into the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and I tried to show her the deities, and all she could see was these beautiful crystal chandeliers. And, you know, she couldn't have it. But somehow or other, the effect was there on their consciousness. A very powerful way. Never forgot. So it has a potency. And I always remember the tape where Prabhupada's in his room talking and said basically, you know, even a dog at the end of their life in Vrindavan, it's spiritually elevated. And Prabhupada said in his deep voice, enriched with that faith and conviction, which therefore enables that penetrates your heart. Prabhupada said, that is the glory of Vrindavan Dham. But nonetheless, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went through South India to these different places with so many, because all Vaishnav conceptions, not all Vaishnav, but all Vaishnavacharyas, they come from the south. Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Nimbarka Acharya, they all come from the south. So all the conceptions are there, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveling around these places. And now he enters into Jagannath Puri, where the Antya Lila of the Seisha Lila will begin. And now we're at the part where he's meeting his devotees, and the devotees are, he's arriving in Jagannath Puri, and his devotees are coming to see him. Because that's spiritual advancement. Spiritual advancement comes from Sangha. There can be nothing more important to that Sangha. That's the Paramaguyam. That's the topmost secret of devotional service. In the 11th canto, Krishna himself tells Uddhava, the Parama Guyam. I wish maybe one class I can go over those verses, because they're about Sadhu Sangha. And I mention that not by fast, not by mantras, but by Sadhu Sangha. One can actually achieve the highest perfection. Because Krishna, being a person, responds to love. And that is his opulence. And Krishna is forced to respond to love. That's an opulence. That you cannot help reciprocate those who love you. That you are controlled by those who love you. Is the greatest opulence of personality. because personality is your ability, your standard of personality is the ability to love and reciprocate in relationships, and Krishna is control, and therefore the devotee owns Krishna, and therefore the devotee can give Krishna to you. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Puri, and he's giving the devotees his association, which is the most important thing for their spiritual life. I was in Vrindavan in Prabhupada's last days in his manifested pastimes. And it was very unique time because Vrindavan was very different at that time. Vrindavan, where we lived in the Krishna Balaram Mandir, was a very isolated place. And at what we couldn't even get people to fill up our guest house. Now you cannot even get a room in Vrindavan. The whole Kartik phenomena of people coming to Vrindavan as Kartik is only because Srila Prabhupada left this world in Kartik. And people started attending his disappearance. At that time, you couldn't even get, Prabhupada was concerned, they couldn't even get anybody to even come to our guest house. So isolated. And the devotees would only come once a year for Gaur Purnima. Otherwise, you wouldn't see anybody. Vrindavan was a very lonely place. That was also good. And I can remember when I used to go to the Jamuna every morning for 2 years. The whatever practically spiritual advancement I got was because Prabhupada gave us an instruction to go by kirtan to the Jamuna. And I went every day. This is like a wonderful sadhana, especially, you know, at least 6-8 months of the year. Yeah, we go after Mangal Arati by Harinam to the Jamuna and bathing in that liquid frame, nectar. I remember that, the effect on the consciousness. But I remember going and hearing, you know, silent, quiet Vrindavan. Anyway, somehow my lost train of thought. But anyway, let me get back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I was mentioning that, okay, it's going to come to me in a second. Yes, and then, all of a sudden, when Prabhupada was leaving this world, he was calling all the leaders, and they would come and they would go at least 5 or 6 times. Because they thought, perhaps, I mean, not in a critical way, that, you know, they have so much work to do. You know, how can they just stay there in Vrindavan? And it would get very, very hot in Vrindavan. And many of them weren't Indiophiles, lovers of India. So I remember in the summer, one person couldn't figure out what to do. So he thought, let me fill my room with water. And it became like a steam bath, rather than it is so hot. The Prabhupada, in his mercy, wanted to give his Sangha. And that's what would spread Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is spread by faith. And faith comes from associating with those with faith. So what could be more important than the spreading of Krishna consciousness than the leaders of the society getting Prabhupada's Sangha or association? Because it's that faith that would spread Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness will spread only by faith. And that faith comes from the Sangha and association of advanced devotees. So it's the same way, if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission was to spread Krishna consciousness, and he would do that through his devotees, he called them to Puri. Every year, you come to Puri. And you take the Sangha of the Dham, you take the Sangha of the devotees, and you take the Sangha of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're reading about the various devotees that are coming to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the effect on their consciousness of his association. So I'm going to read a little bit about that today. But I wanted to do one thing too. Because I thought maybe I have a little more time, but I know again I'll go over, is that by Prabhupada's grace, finally this book that I wrote has gone to the printers. You know, probably in a couple of weeks it should be printed, then it has to be shipped here. And greetings from Vrindavan, where I was writing my journals. I haven't had the time, maybe inspiration to write them for a little while. I'm doing other things, but I will continue them. And so today I'd like to just read some coming attractions. But the previous class I mentioned the point that actually came from my journals. And one thing I like to do in the journals is share realizations. And realizations come from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And I was making this point in the same thing that the first Chanakya sloka is that Dharma leads to auspiciousness. If you do the right thing, it will give the best future. The whole principle of Dharma is on this. What is the right thing, in what circumstances, how to apply? You do the right things. And in Hitto Pradesh, the moral, Hitta means good. The instructions that will lead to good. Hitta, that word Hitta means good. I can think of two, good or welfare. Hitto Pradesh, instructions that will lead to welfare. That mana shastra vichara naika nipano sadharma sanstapako lokanam hitta karano chubhuvane. The six Goswamis, they studied the shastra. Mana shastra, to establish the shastra. Why? Hitta karano chubhuvane, to do good for people. Because only good will happen in life if you follow shastra. If you do the right thing. And look at all the decisions we have to make. But we have to make the right decision. And if we make the right decision, then it will lead to good individually. Family, make the right decision, it'll be good for the family. Society, make the right decision, it'll be good for the society. So hit the karana. There's also a verse, I can't, with that word, I don't remember it. So where do we find this? How did this welfare? Where it comes? It comes from following shastra. And in any circumstance, if we want the best result, we have to seek out the shastra conclusion. And therefore, I was making the point, and I guess I can repeat it, because sometimes Sunday and Wednesday crowds are different. If we want to find the best result, we have to find out what is said in the shastra. And what the devotees who represent the shastra say about the application of that shastra to the particular circumstances. And therefore, our faith is called Kshatriya Shraddha, our faith in shastra. And therefore, if we guide our life by shastra, and that's this Hitto Pradesh, it says, the decisions we make now determine our fate, our future. And what we're facing now has been determined by the decisions we made in the past. Can you imagine how many bad decisions we have made in the past to suffer the way we do now? And therefore, we should be even more concerned that now we make the right decisions. Individually, collectively, societally, and how? Based on shastra. And therefore, for an individual, a family, a community, an institution, to lead to the best result, it has to be led by shastra and those who have faith in shastra. And therefore, I mean, I this is from my journal, and I'm going to read it because I think it's so one thing that we have faith. What is faith in Prabhupada? It's faith in his teachings. And if you want to have faith in his teachings, you have to know what his teachings are. And his teachings are the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, or conclusion. And what are those teachings? Those teachings are, one of his teachings are the 10 offenses against the holy name. And what is the first offense? Sadhu Ninda. We do not criticize the sadhus. And we be very careful when we do, because it will lead to a bad result. It'll lead to the worst result. So we have to be so careful. So I was reading and studying the Bhakti Sandarbha. And a good friend of mine in Vrindavan has translated that. Satyanarayan, he's a Vaishnava scholar. So he translated that and was kind enough to give me, I used to attend his classes. And I was attending one of his classes, and I was amazed. He gave this discussion. And this is none different than the teachings of Prabhupada from Bhakti Sandarbha on aparadha tatva. What is the science of aparadha? Not how to commit it, but how to avoid it. So Jiva Goswami gives this brilliant thing. I repeated it on Sunday, but I'm sure people would like to hear it again because it's so important. And it's paraphrased, so there are symptoms. There are symptoms of Vaishnava aparadha. And the first is, I'm going to read, this is from my journal, crookedness or duplicity. A devotee is simple and straightforward. The symptom of aparadha is duplicity. The heart becomes hard and cruel by accumulated offense. That's the nature. Hate and love cannot exist simultaneously. The heart becomes hard. But Vaishnava is soft. So there's duplicity. Because if you're in a Vaishnava community and you commit offense, You will not be Vaishnav. Your heart will be hard, but the duplicity is that you'll have to pose as one. You'll have to pose. You'll have to be duplicitous. Your heart will not be soft. You won't be crying for Krishna. But the standard in Vaishnav society is that you should. So this is the first sister. And then lack of faith in Shastra. If you, the offense, it'll cover our faith. We'll lose the trust and interest in Shastra. That we must be ruled by Shastra. And by those who are ruled by Shastra. And then our bhakti, our attachment. Bhakti is what? You develop the attraction to serve Krishna. And the attraction to be his servant. And if offense develops, we develop attachment and for absorption in things that cause us to deviate from firm faith and devotional service. We'll develop other interests. We are suffering right now. The reason we don't have bhakti, the reason we don't have praying, is because of offenses. And the culture is Leave it. The culture is so important. I always describe this definition of culture. To develop the proper... Just shut that off. Come on. Just shut it off. And just sit down. To develop the culture, the proper... And what's culture? Culture is... Scott, the culture... When you have a culture, it means you create an environment that helps you to grow. And what helps you to grow? Your ability to relate to others, your ability to learn, and your ability to communicate. And the proper culture will give you the ability to do that naturally. And part of that is relating in a way that avoids offenses. That's a Vaishnav culture. I remember this one Vaishnava that an old man, and he was so humble that if his back was to the sun, if your back was to the sun, and your shadow was in front of you, and you were talking to him, he would start to move away from you. He would not even step on your shadow. And then if you turned towards him and your shadow kept on coming, he would continue to move around you. How careful and how respectful was a cultured man that he wouldn't even step on your shadow. This is from the impressions of growing up in a society that taught the value of what is a devotee, what is a fellow human being, how we relate, how we take the humble position. And then slackness comes. One loses interest in devotional practices. Aparad, radha, worship, aparad, separate or distance from worship. And then finally, pride. A devotee is not proud, and he doesn't think he's doing great service. Rather, he is humble and feels he is not sufficiently... I'm distracted. He's not sufficiently serving his guru and Krishna. Because of aparad, one starts to feel that his service is the best. Yes, the desires. Anyway, so the point, it was very interesting. I think it was a series of lectures. I was fascinated by Jiva Goswami and his faith in Shastra and his knowledge of Shastra and his ability to communicate that. And therefore, if these things are duplicity and these things, they're not diminishing or they're increasing. Despite practicing devotional service, you have to look, is it the fruit of aparad? So, that was aparad tattva. I thought today, and then I see already now I already took half the class, but I wanted to read another one of my journals. Just, I thought it would be a nice thing to do, but maybe I should get on to the class. But anyway, I'm encouraged. I'll read it, and then I'll go on to a little further. A little bit different today. Excuse me, I haven't prepared like I should. But okay, here it is. This is an interesting thing. Okay, let me just read the journal. And some of you that know, you know, close, tell me if it works. I read. So I was reading the Bhagavatam, and I saw this. In Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, it says, an intelligent person, expert in perceiving the world around him and in applying sound logic, can achieve a real benefit through his own intelligence, but sometimes one acts as his own instructing spiritual master. So what it means is an intelligent person can look in the world and see the instructions of God. And this is from the part I think of Uddhava is talking about Dattatreya, and he had 24 gurus. So when I was reading this, I found it interesting. I wanted to share it with others. So I said, I found this intriguing verse in Lord Krishna's instructions to Uddhava from the 11th canto. It is a prelude to Krishna's description of the Avadhut Brahman, who saw 28 gurus in nature based on his astute observation of the world. In other words, from individually observing natural phenomena like the sun, wind and fire, and also different species of life, he learned important lessons in life. For example, from the python, who maintains himself from whatever comes of its own accord, he learned the dependence on God. He saw the python. It just stays in the tree and it can wait for a month or two, and then if something comes it can eat, it drops down and it swallows it. And that's, you know, the understanding that God is maintaining everyone. So he learned that aspect put in the proper context, that one can do his duties in Krishna consciousness and Krishna will maintain us. Surprisingly, one of the most important instructions he learned was from Pingala, the prostitute. With great care, she had dressed herself attractively and waited in anticipation for the arrival of her suitor, which means the man would come and she would make money. Although she waited all day and all night, no one comes. So here's this beautiful lady, and this is her desire to make money. No one came. She waited all night. Her experience was so frustrating that she finally gave up her desire and renounced the world to meditate on the Supreme Lord. She became peaceful and eventually attained perfection. From Pingala, the prostitute, the astute Avadhut Brahmin learned that hopes for sense gratification are the root of all anxiety. Now, follow carefully because I usually don't read. Jiva Goswami makes an interesting statement in the purport to this verse about how you're learning from seeing the world. And he quotes, Guru Anusarane Pavartika Iktita. The knowledge acquired by one's own perception and intelligence leads one to appreciate the value of the representative in the world. Because if you observe the world properly and learn the lessons of the world properly, like he learned from the python, like he learned from the prostitute by observing, it will confirm the same instructions that come from Krishna's representative. You say, ah, yes, this is true. This is true. So, in other words, a detached and objective study of the world will disclose the same truth as revealed by the spiritual master, the saintly people, and the scriptures, and will increase one's faith in Shabda Brahman. Now, in this regard, I learned a very important lesson from observing Bhakta Herman. Bhakta Herman was in his late 50s. Not much taller than 5 feet, and somewhat crippled in both feet. Although he could walk without a cane, he struggled terribly, like a devotee blistered on both feet from parikra. His disability, however, was obviously permanent, either congenital or the result of a serious accident or disease. His jaws were also constantly grinding, either from pain or a nervous disorder. He had a strong South Brooklyn accent and a fairly serious speech disorder, so that his already strong accent was further slurred in almost a childish and squeaky tone. I began a conversation with this humble and likable soul. I think I skipped something. What happened was, I was leaving the temple and this older brahmachari came up to me because there were disciples, South African lady disciples of my godbrother Parthasarathy Prabhu, and they, because they know I'm his friend, they wanted to offer me a garland, but because they're kind of chaste Indian ladies, they gave it to this brahmachari, and he introduced himself. So I said, where are you from, Prabhu? He said, I stay 6 months of the year in Berkeley and 6 months in Vrindavan. Oh, what do you do? I mop floods and wash pots. His service was so menial that I almost felt embarrassed to have asked him. But from the tone of his response, I could sense his absence of false prestige. He thus wasn't bothered at all by my question. "Where were you born?" I continued. "Coney Island in Brooklyn. You know where that is?" And I said, "Coney Island? I'm from Cropsey Avenue. Coney Island's less than 15 minutes away." A rapport was developing. "Yeah, that's just over the bridge." I continued our pleasant conversation and can see that he was from the most humble background. I began to recall fond memories, even before I was 6 years old, of my grandmother taking me to Coney Island, the most prominent amusement park in New York City, 50 years ago. It was a big treat to me, but I recall that even as a young child, I could sense that Coney Island, like all amusement parks, was meant for visiting, not for living, at least not decency. "How do you like Krishna consciousness, Herman?" His face lit up. "I don't know why, but I get such nectar comes, all of a sudden nectar." With each nectar, his heart became lighter and his face became brighter. Dr. Herman was very sincere. He was definitely experiencing something wonderful in Krishna consciousness. I learned from Herman the relationship between renouncing false prestige and attaining devotion. Herman didn't have much, but that made him very dependent on Krishna. We are all dependent, but unfortunately our assets like wealth, beauty, intelligence, or birth give us the false sense that we are controlling the world independently of God. We thus lose the sense of dependence needed to approach the Lord feelingly, to approach Him with real devotion. I pray to become free from false ego, the illusory conception of being independent of God, so that I can also feelingly approach God. While writing about Dr. Herman, I am thinking of Jiva Goswami's statement, quote, "The knowledge acquired by one's own perception and intelligence leads one to appreciate the value of the representative of the world. Because observing Bhakta Herman helped me to appreciate the relationship between becoming dependent on God and developing devotion. One of the key messages throughout the teachings of Srila Prabhupada." Here are a few examples of that very same message from Bhagavatam. From Queen Kunti, "My Lord, Your Lordship can be easily approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling." Bhagavatam. So I was saying the same thing that Prabhupada was teaching. That to feelingly approach the Supreme Lord, you have to be a kinshin and gochara. You have to be the sense that I am completely dependent on Him. The same thing I was seeing before this person, who had the most humble background, but had such deep appreciation for Krishna consciousness. From Narada Muni, as they were leaving, those Bhakti Vedantas, who were very kind-hearted souls, instructed me in that most confidential knowledge which was personally instructed by the personality of God Himself. The point here is that Narada Muni got the mercy of the Bhakti Vedantas because they were Dina Vatsala, kind to the poor. And he was underprivileged, the poor, fatherless son of a maidservant, and thus humble. Narada was self-controlled, disciplined, and exceptionally sober, and that made him a good servant. But it was primarily his humility, born of a humble life, that made him the object of mercy for those kind-hearted souls. Studying the 28 gurus of the Avadhut Brahmin also confirmed my own conviction about writing my journal, that an astute view of the world can certainly confirm and bolster one's faith in Krishna consciousness. So, just sharing my journal, and it took up most of the class. I guess let me get back to the CC, because I'm missing that, and I'm trying to figure out where we'll go there, but we're up to the point of, I finished this at the last class, but it's, well, maybe we don't have time, but let me go back to that, and then we'll probably end for today. I kind of did that because I humbly, not humbly, but I admitted I wasn't as prepared as I like. But so the devotees are arriving in Puri, and okay, actually, I'm going to stop for today. Just are there any questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Okay, Gail, what we'll see is, because you're also calling me, you're also calling me tomorrow,
right,
we'll see if anybody else has a question. If they don't, then your questions are more than welcome. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you. Anybody else like to have a question? Okay, Gail?
Yes, I'd like to return to your discussion about duplicity and how it leads to hardness of the heart. And you also said that the reverse happens, that, you know, hardness of the heart leads to duplicity. So would you first please, normally I think I understand duplicity as meaning that you, you're not honest about what you, about your motives, you know, you say one thing but you mean another. So if that is what you mean by duplicity, how does that lead to hardness of the heart and then backwards? Along the same lines, you know, in that same discussion, you were also saying that, you know, a person who is, you know, being offensive, you know, that leads to it leads to not, you know, serving properly.
Yeah.
And then, so then how does such a person go from that position to being able to think that his service is the best?
Okay, let me just explain something. Here's the duplicity, right? If you're not developing bhakti, right? And what impedes bhakti is offenses, right? Then what are you going to develop? You're going to develop material desires. And material desires is for prestige. So if you're in a Vaishnav society, right, what is the standard of prestige? It's your spiritual advancement, right? It's your spiritual advancement. Because whatever society you're in, right, if you're in the material world, then it may, you know, a particular society may be how much sex life you have. You know, another society may be your learning. A Vaishnav society, what? It's not that the Vaishnav aspires for that, but very frankly, what's appreciated in Vaishnav society is Vaishnavism, humility and devotion and service. It's not that we aspire for that. But if you're not developing bhakti, which is the desire to be a humble servant of Guru and Krishna, then what are you going to desire? You're going to desire prestige. So if you're committing offenses, then what will happen to you is the heart will not become soft, because hate, and it's the opposite of love, the heart will not become soft. And if the heart is not soft, you know, you won't be of the status. But if you desire it, you'll have to pose that way. So that's how it will lead to that's how offense will lead to duplicity. Because you'll have to pose as a Vaishnava rather than actually be one. So that's how it actually leads. Then you say, how does that lead to pride? Right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, desire, if you have a desire, this is a psychological fact. If you have desire, it will put you in illusion. That's the whole basis of the material world. That when you actually desire to be something that you're not, and you desire it strongly, it'll change your perception. Mm-hmm. That's the whole fact of the material world. We're desiring to be the enjoyer and the controller, but we're not. So how do you fulfill a desire that is beyond what you are?
Illusion.
By illusion. So if you're developing material desires by offense, the bhakti is not developing, and you're developing strong material desires for what? Right? To be the Lord and Master. Then it'll put you in the illusion that you are. It's such a strong psychological phenomena that what we want as true, we see as true. And then we develop a philosophy to justify it. This is a strong psychological phenomenon. So what it's basically saying, if you ruin your bhakti by offense, if you ruin your devotion by aparad, then duplicity, illusion, and so many things, and pride. And we always know that pride is an illusion. Okay, Gail? We'll talk tomorrow, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Would anyone like to say Hare Krishna today?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, Ladini Das, and Manmohini Devi Dasi.
Oh, great, great. Thank you that you could join. You got that information about the classes and things?
As we did, and you brought it to our home here in Kansas, and we're delighted.
I have to say, it was so nice when you came to Brooklyn watching your friend's house, and I came over on that rainy day.
It was wonderful.
and we'll definitely do something. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bo, Manmohini. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very, thank you that you could come. Great. Old friend of mine, so he used to be the vice president of Brooklyn Temple. Ladini Shakti, a disciple of Mahakrishnaji and his wife, Manmohini, who's actually a English professor there in Wichita, Kansas. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna today?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Kishori Radha.
Oh, great. Kishori Radha. Thank you. Nice to hear you. How are you doing?
Okay.
I won't embarrass you further, but that's nice that you're on.
Thank you.
Kishori Radha, I can't imagine what she's going through. She's pregnant with triplets. That's inconceivable. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna today?
Hare Krishna. Jai Dvaita Swami.
Marge. Wow. I'm with the Ravos. And when you come, we're going to also spend time with their family. Thank you, Marge.
Thank you so much.
Pancha Kalpa, you're out in California. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare.
Wow. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna.
Who's that?
Shastra Das.
Shastra. Jai. Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.
I think I have to speak to you soon about a few things, but... Thank you, Shastra, for being on.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Okay, we'll end now. Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namo.